WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into March, and you know it's going to feel like May here in a couple of minutes. I don't know what the heck happened to my scratch-off. There it is, the Maryland Lottery. We're going to be doing the Crab Cake Tour, and this guy has had a few crab cakes in his day being a real Baltimore. We're going to be over Costas on the 5th of April celebrating 50 years of the Maryland Lottery. I'll have some old-school scratch-offs. Dick Girardi probably remembers these old-school instant lotteries from back in the day. Also, our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. I got my new windows, and I'm getting ready for spring has sprung. All right. But chasing Dick Girardi around for a couple weeks, he is one of the voices of Penn State. Dick grew up here in Baltimore. We were colleagues at one point at Sports First and News American back in 1984. If I have show and tell for you, Dick, I'm going to text my wife and have her bring some show and tell in because I found an old News American you'd be interested in. Ooh, Dick has been at the Philadelphia Daily News for forever. He's in sort of semi-retirement. They don't shoot old horses. They send them to State College to do Big Ten basketball. Dick, how the heck are you? And people don't know who the hell you are, they should Google you because you're a legend and you're one of my friends. How are you?
Nestor, I'm fine. Yeah, it was a great hoop season doing the Penn State games. Got all the way to the Big Ten championship game. Got into the second round. Actually had a three-point lead over Texas with 4.5 minutes to go in Des Moines. So, yeah, it was a great run, especially the month of March. They played 8 games in 18 days. It was a wild scene from Evanston to State College to Chicago and finally to Des Moines, Iowa. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun and watching a team over a period of months get better and better, break the Big Ten record for most threes in a season, have the first All-American up there in 6 decades. So, yeah, it was definitely a fun year.
Dick, I only ask you this, and I'll get into the basketball side of it. I went through this with Leonard Raskin, a little bit with Luke on the air the other day. I drove through Shrewsbury. I did some antiquing, and if my wife can come out of the office, I will actually have props for you to show you, which, as an old news head, you'll appreciate, because they smell like the morgue at the News American. That's all I'm going to say.
Nice.
So you know that smell? You know that smell?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So, like an old library for anybody who wonders what a morgue was and what the bullpen at the News American was. So, I drove up to State College. I had only been to State College one time in my life. It was in 1998. It was an awful day. Michigan beat the hell out of Penn State. The weather was bad. It was Charles Woodson, Courtney Brown, LeVar Arrington, that era. Only time I ever went. And I didn't really see the city because I drove in the morning. It was a mess. RVs, big game, fog. But I did go into the Bryce Jordan Center to stay warm that day, probably to look at girls. It was 1998. It was a long time ago. So, and just to stay dry probably that day. I went back up for Springsteen. I went on a Saturday night up to State College. And I got to just ask you, because when I think of you, no offense, I don't think of Penn State basketball. I think you probably were doing it for a long time before I realized you were doing it, because you live in Philly. You're a basketball and a horse racing head for the most part. And I don't know how you got the gig, although I know that there was a Philadelphia angle about how you got the gig. But just getting there, it's such a uniquely weird place. It snowed 3 times. They call it Happy Valley. I felt like I was in sort of a Disney World for college. I felt like Belushi was going to jump out from one of the I felt like I was in real college for one of the first times ever for a couple of hours. Saw guys look like you and me with their sons and daughters drinking beer. The wrestling thing was that night, and you were playing. It was 7. I walked out of the Lodge Bar in downtown at 6:15 to go see Springsteen. The place was buzzing, and it wasn't necessarily because of Springsteen, you know, it wasn't because of your basketball game, which was nice and it didn't have a good ending, but the wrestling thing, like I learned about State College in one day, my friend Craig Lusco. But did you spend a lot of time there before, like you were doing this?
I did. I covered the football team from 1993 to 2004, like in the Big Ten era. They decided that they needed a full-time guy to do it when they went into the Big Ten. So I did that. I didn't go on a lot of the road trips because we didn't have a Sunday paper, but I was certainly up there a lot. So, yeah, I knew it very well before I got involved with the basketball back in 2004.
When's the first time you went up there? As a Baltimore kid that was a horse racing guy that went off to Philadelphia, I don't look, I know State College people. My friend Ron Drager, my friend Patty Cox, they went there, right. You know, mm-hmm. Stickies, Regatta. I had a girlfriend that was just from Erie, Pennsylvania, back in my Hammer Jacks days. And I, you know, I was in love with her, and we were 5 years. Like, I never went there with her because, like, she was so reverent about the bars and the gig and the cream. Like, the people, it's a cult. I mean, you probably found that out with Santa. It's a cult. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But there's a part of it for me that it was exploratory. I tried to get rid of my ticket and couldn't. So then once I found out, like, okay, I'm stuck into this ticket that costs too much money with a friend, and I wanted to spend the evening, I'm like, I'm going to make a night of it. And he's like, we're not going to be able to park on a Saturday in State College. And I'm like, listen, Dick, I'd never really looked at it on the map. I had never Googled it. I've never had a reason to go there other than a Springsteen concert. And I found it to just be fascinating that if I had a 17-year-old grandkid somewhere down the line and say, oh, let's go up to see State College, maybe go to school there or whatever. But you've been involved, and it's become much more of a basketball thing. And I'll leave this to you and talk some Big Ten and some Terps into this, because everybody thought they had a punch. Purdue thought they were good, right? It's been such a strange year for basketball, and I've spent the morning today with Gary Williams doing nothing but bitching about the Baltimore media. I watched Gary speak literally this morning to the Connects group, so thank you very much, Keith Miller and the folks at Strategic Factory. But Gary spoke for 500 people this morning, and the basketball thing, even he doesn't understand NIL or like where this thing's going. The whole thing feels like it's changed in 5 minutes since the plague.
It has changed completely. The whole sport has changed. I think if you're not, I mean, look at the University of Miami. They're a classic example. They have their men's and women's teams in the Sweet 16. And a lot of it, not all of it, they have obviously very good coaches. Jim Larranaga is the men's coach. But they have a particular person. There's a great story in The Athletic this week by my good friend Dana O'Neill about what that particular person has done to make Miami athletics viable through NIL money. And he's just one person doing it. It's all legal at this point, as far as everybody can tell. But yeah, if you're not in that ballpark at this point, you're probably in trouble. There are places, I mean, FDU, an example, that can get through FAU into the Sweet 16. Penn State, frankly, does not have much NIL basketball money, but they have a great coach. They had older players who just found a way to play that was great. But yeah, it absolutely has totally changed. I mean, look who's no longer around, right, the last 5 years. Roy Williams gone, Boeheim gone, Krzyzewski gone, Jay Wright gone. It's not a coincidence. It's one of the reasons they got out, because the whole game had changed.
Well, Dick, you're in Philly. I saw Jay Wright come. The last time I saw Gary, Jay Wright, mm-hmm. saw Jimmy Patzos. It was the Cal Ripken Foundation Hoops event that they do like in September, maybe October, whatever it was. It was early, and I went, and that's the day where I heard Jay Wright and the current Villanova coach and Kevin Willard. I met Kevin Willard, shook his hand that day, talking about NIL. And obviously the Willards of the world have to be ready for whatever this changes. And it's interesting you'd say the Miami thing, because Gary spoke for 45 minutes this morning. So, I mean, inside the mind of Gary, and 80% of it was stuff that happened before 2002, really. But he did mention the $800,000 for a kid in Miami, $5 million to get this kid and that, and the Manning's kid, $5 million right down to Texas. So what would you teach me? You're an old fart, but a real journalist. You're smarter than most people I know. What if I were to give you 2 minutes for my audience and to say, what do you understand about this? And what's this wild, wild west? Because Gary's still talking about it like somebody in Indianapolis is going to come and fix this, and somebody's going to step in. And I'm like, no, I think this is real wild. He said the old white guy thing. He's almost 80. Guidelines. He said, there have to be guidelines. And I'm like, well, when they made guidelines, everybody ripped the rule book up and just FedEx cash. Right. So like, where's it going?
Here's what happened, Nestor. The NCAA, one of the history's worst organizations, for years said, look, players can't get anything. Right. So players, and really it kind of started around the Fab Five era when they were selling Chris Webber's jersey. And Chris Webber is asking a perfectly valid question. Wait a second. They're selling a jersey with my name on it and I get nothing. And they said, yeah, that's right. You get nothing. That's it. And
like,
be happy.
Wonka, you signed here.
That's right. Be happy that you get what you get, and too bad. And then obviously sports on television money exploded. in college basketball, college football, obviously the NFL, MLB, the NBA, coaches' salaries exploded. So the players are then saying, all right, hold on a second here. There's all this money in the game that nobody anticipated, and we still get nothing. So the O'Bannon lawsuit really started this. They said, hey, we deserve to get a piece. They wouldn't even, they were using their likenesses on the video games. They still couldn't get anything. So as this got into court, and judges and finally the Supreme Court said, this is absurd that the people who people are paying to go see get no piece of the action. So each court ruled, obviously, that the players are entitled to something. And while this was happening, the NCAA still did nothing, didn't come up with any guidelines, no regulations, said, oh, it'll never happen, as they lost every case in court. And now it's at the point where there are no rules, there are no regulations, and it ain't gone back. It's the Wild West, and that's what it's going to be. Gary, I'm sorry for you, but my man, the game that you coached is over. It's just a different sport, and there's nothing the NCAA can do about it, because every time they try to do something, they lose another court case.
Well, Dick Girardi is our guest, the legendary Philadelphia Daily. We're going to get to some horse racing at some point, as we know it, but you and I are into Big Ten basketball, and you've been covering. How many years at Penn State have you been doing color now?
This was my 19th season of doing Penn State basketball. And it's interesting, Nestor, people don't know this, but the last 6 years, the program's really been very good. It's been a top 50 program for 6 years now. 6 years ago, they won the NIT, should have been in the NCAA tournament, had really what was a Sweet 16 team with a bunch of Philly kids as the stars on the team. And then they've been in the top 50 in the KenPom every year but last year. And the only reason they weren't in last year is because the new coach came in, Micah Shrewsbury, and all the speed on the team left. They because they could go immediately and play. Isaiah Brockington was one of the stars on that team 2 years ago. He was first team all Big 12 at Iowa State last year. Penn State would have been really good last year too, had all the players stayed. So yeah, this has been a 6 year run. I think people just discovered them this year because they got to the finals of the Big Ten, crushed Texas A&M and gave Texas, all they needed in round two. But yeah, it's really been a 6 year progression. But prior to that, it was a struggle. There isn't any question about that. Through Ed DeCellis, who did the best he could. Of course, he's now at Navy. And then when Pat Chambers took over, and you mentioned Sandusky a little while ago, Chambers' first game was the first football game after the Sandusky thing broke. So talk about walking into a tough spot, not just in football, but in basketball too. It impacted every part of the university for a number of years, including the men's basketball program.
Well, I saw Springsteen. I went into Bryce Jordan. My buddy's like, I like it. It's all one level. And I'm like, there's no room in here. The place is ill-equipped. I said, I hope there's not a fire. I mean, nobody could get out. And, Bruce rocked the place. It was incendiary. But the amazing thing of being up there that day, and again, like, how many times had you been there before you covered football? Did you go for a game or something like, or games?
I want to say I'd been there twice, once or twice for different events. But, yeah, I had not been up there. There was no reason. Look, I'm a Maryland guy. I went to Maryland. I was certainly aware of it. But as you found out, I mean, it's in the middle of the state. It's in Center County. It's in the center of Pennsylvania. That's where you put the state university, right? So people can get to it from Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and everywhere else. But yeah, it's a 3-hour, 15-minute drive from where I live. So yeah, it's not close to anything.
Yeah. And, I got up there. I ran into Ross Tucker at the Springsteen show, giving me peachy Paterno ice cream. So I felt like I felt like the experience I had would, like, my wife would be like, let's go for a game. They're playing Ohio State, whatever, let's get tickets. We know people, we'll figure it out. And I'm like, pain in the ass, the road in. Now it looks like they made the road a lot bigger on the way in
than what I remember.
So it's like on Ocean City when they fix 50 and you can get there,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, so they've done a great job with that over time, for sure.
So I felt like all of that is good. But when there's 125,000 people there on a Saturday and they are playing Ohio State or whatever, that's not like seeing the place. So I really do feel like I drove in, on a, you know, on the road. It wasn't taillights. We parked. We had some Chinese food. Walked around a little bit. It snowed randomly, sort of whenever of it course. Wanted to. You know, so I felt like I had an experience. I got my $400 worth, and it wasn't just Springsteen singing "Hungry Heart." I'll promise you. You know.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of my good buddies, Pat Romano, who runs a restaurant about 20 miles outside of State College. It's called, you'll love this, it's called We Are In, I-N-N. It's a hotel restaurant about 20 miles away. He's a Penn State guy. And he sent, after they beat Texas A&M on Thursday, he's saying, do you know when the game is Saturday? Because he had bought 4 Springsteen tickets for 2000, and he desperately wanted the game to be either the late game or the afternoon game. And of course, as you know, it was 7:45 Eastern, so it was the worst possible time. So
Bruce went on at 7:43.
Exactly. There you go. Enough said. And the game started actually more like 8:15 because the first game went long. But yeah, it was a giant day. I mean, the wrestling team had already clinched the NCAA title the day before because they got up so many wrestlers into the finals. But yeah, that was a classic State College day. And you'll like this, Nestor. I arrived back at State College a little before 6 a.m. on Sunday. And the hotel I always stay at, I called about midnight, said, hey, do you have any rooms? And I figured they wouldn't because of Springsteen. I said, no, but I think somebody's going to be leaving. We'll find a spot for you. So I got there at 6 a.m., slept a couple hours, and then drove home.
Did they give you Bruce's room?
I think they did.
When they busted out of class.
Yeah. I don't know that Bruce was famous. Yeah, I'm not sure where Bruce was staying. Was it just a one-night thing up there? Was it just Saturday night?
It was just a Saturday night, in and out the Bryce Jordan Center.
I think he was in Philly a night or two before, so there's a chance he just – I don't know whether he flies or drives or what he does in between places that close. But, yeah, there was no evidence that Bruce was in that room, but it could have been Bruce.
All right, well, that's good. Dick Girardi is here talking all things Big Ten and basketball. Where are you on the Terps and what they did this year? You had a chance with your own eyes to see them a couple of times, obviously, out at the tournament. And take it from the bottom of where – we've already referenced the bottom of Sandusky and how bad Penn State basketball was for like 50 years. But for Maryland and this – and I was with Gary Land, and I'm wearing my State Fair shirt all morning today, and thinking about – and Luke's really big on this, about where the ceiling was for the Turgeon program and where the level of expectation was, and what – could Maryland ever be a Duke, North Carolina? Could we ever be the UCLA of the East again? And Willard in 1 year has gone 1 year and 3 months now from Turgeon dropping the mic before Christmas, Danny picking it up, kids going everywhere, the beginning of NIL, all of this happening. And he won a game in the 64. And I mean, had they not drawn Alabama and not been so awful on the road everywhere they were, maybe they could have had a higher seed. And Dick, maybe I'd be calling you for a preview of the Maryland East Bejesus game this weekend, and they'd be in the 16. It's really remarkable in 1 year what Kevin Willard has done.
Yeah, I thought they overachieved, and I think you got to give credit to the coach. First, he got the guys to stay that easily could have left, given what was going on in the program. And obviously bringing in Jameer Young was the key part of it. Without him, none of this is going to happen. They needed to upgrade the point guard position. They did. The Philly kids from Roman Catholic and Imhotep they were really good for them. I thought they played as well as they possibly could. Yeah, they got a hideous second-round draw playing Alabama and Birmingham. I don't think they were going to beat Alabama anywhere. They certainly weren't going to beat them in Birmingham. But I think all in all, I think Maryland fans should be pleased. They're in one of the great recruiting areas in the country, in the DMV. No reason that they can't get some of the best players in the area to come to Maryland, the great tradition, the fact who they play, that the gym was electric again this year. It wasn't the last couple of years. I was down there fairly late in the season. It was a noon Saturday game, and it was really
– By then, the train was rolling. Yeah. And that's the whole Fear the Turtle thing. And the thing I talked to Luke a lot about this week, and I was up at Hollywood Casino at the Barstool Sports watching the West Virginia game, and there were people there. And there were people there that had gray hair like us that were reengaged a bit, taking the day off, getting some suds, watching the game, and really – enjoying the fact that this isn't willed to you, that you just get to play every March, that there was turmoil and a lot of change here, and this could have gone anywhere, and there was no expectation, right? To your point, like, it's remarkable that they played a couple of games last week, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, look, the key to the future of the program, obviously, is the kid from Baltimore, Reese, from St. Francis. I mean, he you could see him, Nestor, over the last 2 months figuring it out. And I know Kevin was really upset when he got into foul trouble against Alabama. He said the game totally changed. And he might be right. I don't think they're going to win anyway. But without him, they had zero chance because Alabama is that good. But, yeah, I see them heading in the right direction. I think there's room to move in the Big Ten. The league has not been very good for the last 3 years. The last really good year in the Big Ten was the COVID year, where they had, and this includes Penn State, they had three or four teams that could have made the Final Four. Michigan State was sensational. Maryland was really good that year, and none of them got a chance to play. And since then, I mean, it's just been a nightmare in the postseason. They only have one team in the Sweet 16 again. Purdue gets bounced out by FDU. So the league, I think if you can get more athletic, and get guys that are willing to play fast. Maryland really couldn't do that this year because they didn't have enough bodies. But if you can play fast and be more athletic, you have a chance to move up dramatically in the Big Ten because it's slow and an unathletic league, and that's been its problem in the postseason.
Well, that's – look, that was the reputation in the 80s and the 90s, sure. Right? Like, yeah. And Penn State went into the Big Ten years ago, as you pointed out, football and basketball. Maryland makes this thing. And at heart, you're a Maryland guy, Dick, right? So you're an old lefty guy. I mean, going, you know, Buck Williams back then, right? So seeing the way the Big East became this brawl 30 years ago and it sort of got legislated out, what will legislate or recruit out big white centers in the Midwest? Like, I mean, other than they take up soccer, literally, or go somewhere else and play somewhere else where they don't want to win in March. But the game has changed. I mean, Steph Curry's changed the game of basketball, right?
Correct.
The way the 100%. Game is played, literally. Yep.
Well, think about this. Zach Edey's probably going to be the National Player of the Year. If he enters the NBA draft, he can enter it, but he ain't going to get drafted. So that tells you how the whole sport has completely changed. And the Big Ten hasn't changed with it. It's still a big man-centric league in a sport that's completely changed to the favor of the guards. And it's the main reason Penn State had its success this year. They were the smallest team in the league. Yet they decided early on in the first game, Nestor, they made 18 threes. That was a school record. They made 18 threes later against Indiana. They crushed the old Big Ten
Bobby
record.
Knight wouldn't let him shoot 18 threes.
Correct.
Like, Gary would never have advised that in 1994 as proposition of basketball, right?
It was a whole group of coaches that never adapted to the three, Knight being one of them, Rolly Massimino being another, John Thompson. You could go on to the great coaches in the late 70s into the early 80s.
They didn't like the math. They didn't like the analytics in their mind. Right.
And that's why Rick Pitino is still coaching today at 70, because he figured it out before the rest of them did. And he got a Providence team the first year to three to the Final Four that never should have happened. But he understood threes. His team would make like seven or eight a game. The teams he was playing, like Georgetown and Villanova, wouldn't take five a game. They didn't understand it. They, that's not basketball. Well, it is. Wake up or get legislated out. That's what happened to those guys. But Penn State figured that out this year. Their coach, Micah Shrewsbury, has NBA background. He was with Brad Stevens and the Celtics. He knows the value of the shot. And his players, the best guys on his team, were three-point shooters. So what's he going to do, try to throw it into the post? No, he's good. Basically, what he did was let other teams score from the post. And he said, well, you can score a lot of twos. We'll score a lot of threes. Add it up. We win, you lose.
Dick Girardi is here. I'm going to hold him just bonus time here for just I need a little horse racing from you. And then I have some show and tell that's very, very significant to your heart and mine as well. So
yes,
horse racing, where are we? Give me the horse and Baffert and just. Honestly, horse racing goes away here for a couple of months these days. We don't have a sports section here anymore, you know?
Understood. So here's where we are. Forte, the two-year-old champion, won the Breeders' Cup. He won his first race of the season, the Fountain of Youth. He'll run again in the Florida Derby in a couple of weeks for Todd Pletcher. If he wins, he'll be the heavy favorite going to Churchill Downs. And you ask about Baffert. Baffert is once again banned from the Kentucky Derby. His ban ends when the race ends this year. He can run horses everywhere else in his own name. He will have something in the Preakness, and he will be there this time. He won't have to be. He's not suspended anymore just by can't run at Churchill Downs tracks. So Baffert has, I don't know, three or four pretty good three-year-olds all being trained now by Tim Yakteen, who will train them through the Derby and then turn them back over to Baffert. And Bob will appear in Baltimore and will go and eat some crab cakes at Michael's while he's watching the horses, the two-year-olds get ready at Timonium right after the Preakness. So yeah, you will get to see Bob again this year at the Preakness. His best horse, however, Arabian Knight, Nestor, is off the Derby trail, 2 for 2. I thought he was the horse that was going to win the race. He's got some kind of problem. We will not see him for a while, but remember the name Arabian Knight. He might be the best of the bunch.
All right, look, hold that Tuesday for Preakness week and Derby week. We'll get together. So serendipity follows me everywhere I go. You would agree. You know, yes, me when I was an Ovaltine. I was a chunky 15-year-old kid when you met me in the News America.
I remember it well.
You remember meeting me? Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. So 1984, I meet Dick Girardi, who, by the way, our first byline has my first byline of Teresa Andrews has your name, Rick Petro's name. You guys were making your picks on your racing because I was okay. On like page 9 that day, which is where the racing was.
Rich Petro, one of my men, one of the greats.
So you got to come down to the Guinness Factory next year when we do the Baltimore Sports Writer get together. But they always do it on a Saturday in fall. I don't know where you are, but
let me know about it. You got my phone number.
Molly Dunham runs it, and I'll Molly Glassman. I'll awesome. Get up. I'm on it. We'll get you cool. There. Mark Hyman, like and all the greats are there. So I went to State College because I got stuck into this ticket that I bought last year. Long story, right? Was trying to get rid of it. Nobody. So I go alone with my buddy, yep. Craig. I'm going through Shrewsbury. Yep. My son's an antiquer. And, you know, I collect old belt buckles, rock and roll belt buckles. Do you know about my collection? So this is the one I'm wearing today. I'm wearing the Cars today. I wore this. I was kind of red for Gary Williams this morning. So I'm looking for these in the Shrewsbury antique. And I go in. And, of course, they have sports stuff. I saw a Baltimore Clippers banner that I wanted.
Ooh,
$75.
Jim West.
Beautiful. Jim West. It was orange. It was legit.
Aldo Gwendolyn.
It's a little out of my price range of $75. And then they had this this bottle opener that was a skate that had the AHL logo and the old Clippers logo on the other side. Late 60s, that literally it was a giveaway and you open bottles with it. It was like for your bar at your house, right? Yeah. Hell of a giveaway. Better than any bobblehead, I would think, right? $225. No good. So I go to the back. And they had a 1968 Colt album with Chuck Thompson. It was like $10. I'm like, I don't have a phonograph to play it. But, you know, could I put it on the radio? Would we listen to it? Whatever, right? They didn't even win. So then I found this. Are you ready? Are you ready for this?
Ooh, John Steadman, my man.
John Steadman. Can you see what it is? It is. It's why I open it up, dude, and I touch it like I'm touching, like, Harrison Ford in Indiana Jones when he was touching his
Absolutely.
So I'm going to show you this, okay? Ooh. World Series 1966. It says here, the Orioles will win the World Series. John Steadman. This is the souvenir issue. Can you see that right there?
Wow.
With the
Carson
bird?
Yeah,
right,
I got it.
The Jetsons, right?
Yeah.
So how much for I found this. This was $5, Dick.
Yeah.
So you buy this, right? You pick it up, right?
100%.
Okay. So the other thing that's behind
Hold on.
It,
this is prior to them sweeping the Dodgers. John Steadman says the Orioles will win the World Series.
This is October the 2nd, 1966. John Steadman says, it says here, the Orioles will win the World Series. Pretty prescient.
Pretty impressed.
Pretty
prescient,
I would say. Yeah, John, so behind that is the Baltimore Sun, Orioles complete sweep of World Series.
I got that paper. I still have it. 1-0, Dave McNally, Paul Blair.
Have you ever seen this particular front? Because this looks like a first edition. This looks like the legitimate version of the cover. They never used this cover. There was another picture of McNally and Brooks jumping into his arms, right?
Yeah, sure.
You're thinking,
yeah.
I've never. This is the legitimate. This is the real original one. So I bought them and I brought them home and I didn't open them because I got home at 2 a.m. because I was driving all night and there were deer on the road. There was a Taco Bell and York. So I get home. I don't open them until I'm on the air with Luke. And I did this as a shtick on the radio Monday morning because, like, it's not Orioles season yet. Nobody cares about the Orioles yet. but they will in a week. And so yep. I broke this out and I opened it and I told a story and I'm like, Luke, I don't know, like, but the original one, and when I opened it, the other papers fell out of it.
Wow, there it is.
Yeah, there it is, right?
That's the one. Real sure. No,
this is the souvenir. Yeah. This is the one on the mugs and the shirts and the hats and the Walmart, right? So,
Nestor, do I have this right? They win 1-0. Frank hit the home run to win the game. Is that right? Frank Robinson?
Hold on, let me get the box score. Hold on a second. I got the box score right here. The box score right here. The Orioles won 1-0. And the home run. Correct. That's correct.
Frank Robinson, the greatest Oriole of all.
So this was $9. The Baltimore Sun was $9. And in it is also the Evening Sun headline.
Ooh, nice.
All of this for $9. Okay. And I get to read it. Wow. So then the News American, I open this up, Dick. And when I open this up, it's a 32-page section. And when I open it up, there's a gig in here. I'm figuring little Louie was here. This is the reason I'm in Baltimore, is because
Goofy
cousin played shortstop and he's a Hall of Famer. Aparicio. Yep. Retire? No. You like that?
Nice. Look,
is there anything better than fingering through an old newspaper when you're an old newspaper guy? They smell like the morgue. And you know why they smell like the morgue at the News American? Dick, there's a blue. They had color print in 1960.
Wow. That's impressive.
Three in a row. This is the Sunday edition.
One to go.
This was the headline from the day they won. And here's Wally Bunker firing blanks at those Poe Dodgers and Stedman writing about it in the corner.
I don't think they scored a run in the last three games, did they, the Dodgers?
Bunker's arm hurt, Dodgers pained more. Steady. So when we get together and you and I get cheesesteaks and get grease all over our hands at that joint and we go watch basketball at the Great Palestra, I will bring these heirlooms and treasures for you, Dick Girardi.
And I will take you to Joe's in Fishtown, about 5 minutes from the Palestra, and you will be very excited.
Is it going to make me flatulent?
No.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Joe's has it all correct. Used to be up in Northeast. They closed that place, but they have another place in Fishtown, which is just a little north of Center City.
Is Fishtown the pig town of Philly?
Yeah, I don't know Pigtown well enough. I mean, I know where it is, but I haven't been there in so long. I know it's become like an upscale kind of a place, right? Which is hard to imagine. But maybe that's a good analogy.
They got great pizza there. Dick Girardi has great pizza where he is. He's in the city of brotherly love. The only guy, not the only guy, because Buck Doll left here too. But one of the few that left the land of pleasant living for those delicious pretzels up there and all that competitive sports and all of that testosterone that makes Philadelphia, Philadelphia. He's also the voice of Penn State basketball and a Big Ten legend. Dick, I love you. You're one of my originals. You're my OG, and we got to get together soon. All right, Palestra, you and me.
Sounds like a plan, Nestor. Let's make it happen.
Keys to the Palestra, and you and I could just shoot some baskets there. Would that be fun?
I can get in there whenever you want.
Let's do that. That would be like
it's not a problem. That would be cool. I know the right people. Hey, look, I'm up on the walls in there, man. I'm big in that joint.
Your name's on the wall in the Palestra?
My picture is up there. Yeah.
All right. I'm coming up. I'm coming. Tommy Conwell. Here's what Tommy Conwell is putting the Rumblers back together on the 28th of April, up at Ardmore. So if you could do the April 28th or even the morning of the 29th, I'll get a room and stay the night because Tommy makes me drink. But I love Philly. You know, my thoughts to you on losing Super Bowls and World Series. It was
a great year with bad endings. But other than that, I mean, they had the best team in the Super Bowl, didn't win, did not have the better team in baseball, almost won. And the soccer team, by the way, lost the MLS Cup on the afternoon. The Phillies lost the World Series only in Philadelphia.
1969, you remember it well here. Yeah, I'm sure you do. That's why I didn't buy that 68 season. Like Chuck Thompson, Bill O'Donnell.
I understand.
I don't need that.
Great team with a bad ending. Yep.
Yeah, my dad, you know, he didn't like that very much. I am Nestor. He was Dick. We've been entertaining you. We are BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us here at AM 1570.